to Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells, and it's the day after Sundance, and the snow is falling, and life is good in Park City, Doug.
Boy, what a party this town put on for the last 10 days. So proud of what we did here.
And it seemed to run very smoothly this year. Traffic and storm and chaotic conditions.
The big controversy was the drones. What are we going to do about those drones?
Well, if that's the biggest thing we have to worry about, we're in fine shape. And a little bit of snow falling today, not significant accumulations, but good to have. And interesting show today. We're going to talk about snow and snow safety and a new business developing in Park City that addresses that. And that will be the first subject today, Avatech. We'll have the two of the developers of a new avalanche safety system, which is going to be deployed not just here in the Wasatch, but eventually worldwide.
And I promise you, when they tell you their idea, you're going to think, why didn't I think of that? It's brilliant. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. And then, Larry, we're going to have a gentleman who's becoming a regular guest on the show, Bill Brunson. He's with Media Relations with the IRS, and he's going to tell us about scams that we need to look out for, and then also services that the IRS can do to help us as we prepare our taxes this year. And our final guest is going to be Anne-Marie Portnoy. She is the owner of My Liquid Garden over by Kimball Junction by the Best Buy. If you've ever tried juicing, you know how great it makes you feel, but it's also a very big hassle. And it's great to have a place you can go and have juices freshly made for yourself. I've been there myself and love it. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Think Park City's a great place to live? You ought to try meeting here. Recommending Park City for your business, club, or association group is not only a smart idea for them, but it actually helps support the community where you live and play. Meeting and event planning is easy. Log on to parkcitymeetings.com or call 1-800-453-1360. This message brought to you by the Park City Chamber Convention and Visitors Bureau, a nonprofit proud supporter of KPCW programming.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, and as light snow falls, let's talk about heavy snowfall and the both the pleasure and terror it can provide in the mountain environment as we go out backcountry and even front country skiing. We have two gentlemen who are involved in the startup company Avatech, Tumas Lakso and Brent Markle, and this is technology that came out of research at MIT in Cambridge. And Brent Markle has just moved out to Utah in the last year to launch this. So give us the big picture and the backstory of what this technology promises and how it came about.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much for having us here today. And we started Avatech about 2 years ago out of MIT, myself and couple engineers. I was in the business school working with two other engineers from the mechanical engineering school. And the idea is that we wanted to develop a new technology that was proactive, the first type of technology that could help people make better decisions before an avalanche happens. And there's two elements to that. There's a hardware side of the technology, which essentially measures snow stratigraphy and other characteristics about the snow. And in addition to that, we crowdsource that information geospatially all over the world, so anyone in real time can see what's going on in the mountains.
Snow stratigraphy. I can't pronounce it. I'm not sure what it means.
Yes.
but before we go there, I want to come back to that in a moment. I can't let that pass without commenting. you know, it's crazy. I took an avalanche safety class about a decade ago. I was going to do some backcountry skiing with my buddies. And I was really surprised at how you evaluate the safety of a slope. I mean, the technology until what you guys have done really hasn't changed in the last 50 years. How is it done now, and what did your probe do to make it different?
So today, the way we learn about the snowpack is we have to dig a 6-foot hole in the snow. And we're absolutely not replacing that. But what we're doing is when you dig a snow pit, 6-foot hole in the snow, you're looking at various layers of the snowpack using your hands. There's fist layers, forefinger layers, one finger layers, and it's all a manual, oftentimes subjective assessment. My hand might be a little bit different size than your hand, and we might see different things in the snowpack. And so what the SP1 does, which is so powerful, is it's an objective measurement device. It's reading the exact force characteristics of the snowpack as it's running through the snow. And whether you use it, I use it, Larry uses it, anyone uses it, it's going to give us the same information about the snowpack. And that's really powerful when we can share information objectively.
And we're on radio, but basically if you unfold the device, it is, 4 or 5 foot long probe that you can stick into the snow, and it's filled with sensors that are reading each layer objectively, like you say, rather than you two looking at the same layer and coming up to a slightly different conclusion. So what all is in this device, and how do you envision this being deployed? Is this something everybody who goes into the backcountry will carry with them? Tumas.
Great question, Larry. One thing about that snow pit that is important to understand is a lot of that information just stays in the pit. If you are doing those tests and they've been around for 50 years, there's no real great way to share that information. So that information is valuable to many people, not just in that one hole there. So what we're doing is basically a communication device with a lot of sensors. So there's a lot of technology behind this. There's probably 5 different digital sensors. There's accelerometer, there's IR, there's optical sensors, there's GPS, Bluetooth, force penetrometer. So a lot of technology, but we don't want to be buried in just data. It's a communication device to help us all understand snowpack better.
So I want to paint a picture for our audience, right? Because obviously they can't see this probe. And so is it accurate for me? As I see it, it's essentially a smart ski pole. I mean, it looks like essentially a ski pole without the basket at the bottom of it.
With a GPS unit on top.
And you stick it in the snow, and there's all these smart sensors that test the snow. From my snow safe, my 2 hours worth of training, the different layers, it's like a tree. You know, a tree has different rings. Snows has different layers. Is that a good visual? Is that a decent way to describe what your device is doing?
Yeah, it's a great example. The scientific community are seeing layers they've never seen before. So we have about 5,000 data points on every probe strike. So we're seeing very, very fine detail into the snowpack. But on the big picture, you're looking for a hard layer over a soft layer. If you see something like that, then you know you have to do some more investigation.
And the data is accumulated on the pole, the probe itself. And then what? You can upload that data to your website, and others can then see what you saw?
Exactly. In real time, you take the measurement. It's automatically geotagged, and then via Bluetooth through your cell phone, it goes up into the cloud onto our Avanet platform. And so right now, today, we have hundreds of organizations all over the world using Avanet. It's a professional system today. You were asking earlier about that, and so we're working with ski resorts, with guiding companies, forecast centers, departments of transportation, mines in high alpine areas, and they're all using this to share information. It's been really neat to see in the first 3 months here since we launched.
So I believe their name is the Avalanche Forecasting Center, right? They're on
at the Weather Service.
At the Weather, and they're here almost every day, right? At least a couple times a week, right, on KPCW. So is this a service that a professional organization like that would use, and are they using it now?
Yes. So we've had moving here to Park City, it's been really important for us to engage the local mountain community. We're about, the whole foundation of the company is getting mountain communities to talk to each other. So it's been important for us to really work with the UAC and the Utah, the UDOT, Powder Birds, Park City Powder Cats. They've been very instrumental in helping us develop this over the last couple of years. So they've been on the test program. And now on their back end, they're using a lot of the software. The hardware actually delivers in about a week. So it's an exciting time in the company's history. We're sitting here looking at the first production unit on our table now. So coming up, they'll be using the SP1, but currently they've been using the software and looking at information that way.
So presumably everybody who's a backcountry skier is listening, is saying, I want one of those. How do you roll out? I mean, this is a product that applies to mountain communities worldwide across the snow bands of both hemispheres. So how do you, I mean, how do you start in Park City and roll something like that out across the world?
I think it's a great point. And actually, if you were to go onto Avinet today, you'd see data being shared all over the world, in Europe, in Japan, and all across the United States. But we're very, very focused right now on the professional community. Last year, we tested with over 50 organizations from six different countries. And that's been a really important part of our approach. And it's part of the MIT philosophy as well, is really learning from the best experts we can in the world. And that's why some of our earliest customers are the absolute best at what they do. And we're learning from them. And I think when we think about the broader mountain community, we do have some exciting plans absolutely coming up in the coming years, both on the software and the hardware side. But we're really focused right now on working with professionals and nailing.
So as this ships next week, who does it ship to?
The global reach has been really supportive. We actually have 34 countries right now on the platform. And we just set up our European headquarters in Chamonix, France. So we actually get on a plane tomorrow morning and fly over there for a couple of weeks. So the first customers are from Chile to Japan, all through Europe, Scandinavia, Canada, U.S. So we've had a really successful beta launch here.
So, some of my Park City Angel friends are listening to this and thinking, hey, I'm really glad there's a group of young guys out there that are going hard, smart. They're developing a device that many of them, including Mike Florence, if you're listening, want to be using. But they're probably thinking, I'm glad that's out there, but it's not a huge market. I've heard your pitch before, and when you got me to really start paying attention is when you told me where the real money's made, which is not so obvious. It's not necessarily in the avalanche forecasting. It's what happens when that snow starts melting. What is that value proposition, and why do you think it's really the big revenue source, if you can get it? Explain to the audience what I mean by this, and why is it such a big opportunity?
Well, I think there's a couple levels of where we see our company going. As you mentioned, it really starts out working with the professional community. But then there's also this element, as you mentioned, on the consumer side, a recreational backcountry skier, through the proper education channels of
I'm talking about the big opportunity.
Yeah.
Water management. Yep. Talk to us about water management.
Exactly. So I was going to touch on Smart Probe being in everyone's pack. But exactly. Once we aggregate data all over the world, that data, we believe, can be statistically correlated to things like snow water equivalent. And gathering snow water equivalent on a very localized scale can have a lot of potential in terms of downstream water prediction, whether that's for agriculture, for hydroelectric dams, for anyone that depends on water. We think there's an interesting data opportunity there to really to help our communities also on the environmental side.
For instance, if you live in a high altitude desert like essentially we do here, being able to forecast and control your water source, which is the snow, is critically important.
Yeah. Call it meltable assets, or it's purely a byproduct of what we're doing. Though the wonderful thing about gathering a global snowpack information, you can look at it through the frozen medium or the liquid medium, and first and foremost, it's about getting communities to make better decisions in the backcountry and protecting commerce from avalanches, and the hydrology side is a wonderful byproduct that we're investigating.
Talk about the just kind of your personal motivations. How did it occur to engineers and business students at MIT that this is something the world needs? Are there personal stories about riding out avalanches or friends lost, or what's the seed of the idea?
I think that's perhaps the most important point. We started Avitech because we've lost friends in avalanches. We're intimately, perhaps too intimately, aware of the problem. A couple of years ago, I used to live in Switzerland and was skiing in Verbier, a very popular backcountry destination, one of the most incredible resorts in the world, but the lift accessed backcountry is just too accessible almost. And one day I was skiing a run that I'd skied probably 10 times before that season. And there's a lot of human factors involved in avalanche safety. And sometimes you can be too familiar with terrain, or maybe you're with an expert. Maybe I'm with Tumas. And who's the expert? Is Tumas? He's been in the industry for many years. Am I? Maybe because I knew that local terrain. And with that particular group, unfortunately, at that point, we made a poor decision that day. We weren't aware of a very concerning persistent weak layer that was under the snowpack, and a friend of mine was carried almost 1,000 feet, almost over a huge cliff band, could have easily lost his life that day. Unfortunately, was partially buried. We were able to get him out. But it was just a huge wake-up call for me personally. And I always went back to that day, fast-forwarding 2 years, when I started grad school at MIT, and I was just thinking, wow, what if we could merge technology with the outdoors and with this avalanche problem in particular? And what if there had been technology that could have helped us see what was under the snow, inform that decision before we made it? Or perhaps had there been some way to share information, or someone could have told us earlier in the day that they'd seen concerning signs about that slope? So that was really the initial seed, at least for me personally. I've been skiing since I was 2 years old, and backcountry skiing the better part of the last 15 years. And that was one that I think changed the way I viewed it.
And I think the industry has done a great job in advancing technology in triage. Basically, how do I stay on top of an avalanche? How do I breathe underneath an avalanche? How do I dig them out faster? And that's not the point. The point is how to avoid avalanches, and how can you merge technology to be a proactive device other than today it's education. Tomorrow, education is still as important, but we're creating a device that helps kind of supplement your education and communicate.
That was a great question, Larry, and I love that response, right? It's a personal response. How did you get into this? Staying with that theme, talk to us about, okay, so the idea came, there ought to be technology. You're at MIT. You're the right person for the job. There's a huge journey between the idea and having your commercial prototype sitting on the desk of a radio station in Park City, Utah. What did that journey look like? How did you make this a reality?
Well, I think it all starts with the team. This wasn't an idea is only as good as the team that you have behind it. And was very fortunate to meet Jim Christian and Sam Whittemore, who've also moved here to town, to Park City. And my co-founders, we met in a product design class, actually. It brought business students together, design students from the Rhode Island School of Design, engineers as well from MIT. And in that, we brought the idea of Avatech into it and developed our first prototype out of that class, actually. And over the course of that summer, we built out an advisory board of some of the top experts across avalanche safety, leading athletes as well in the industry, like Chris Davenport and Hillary O'Neill. And we really used that to learn. We wanted to make sure that we were solving real problems here. We tested initial prototypes down in South America, spent another winter testing all across the world. And so to your point, you know, it evolved from an idea, but through a whole heck of a lot of work, through building the team, and then ultimately realizing that, frankly, there weren't a lot of avalanches in Boston. And so we said, we got to get out to somewhere where we're closer to our customers, closer to the mountain community that really understands what we're all about and what we're trying to do here. And it's been just a terrific journey and a great move for us.
Were you hoping at some point that this would become your life, or did you think initially, hey, this is going to be a hobby, I'm going to be an advisor, somebody else is going to run with it?
I think once we started working on this, we knew that it was going to be something big, and we knew that this is what we wanted to do. I think coming out of MIT, just so fortunate to have tremendous mentors and advisors, and there's just a lot of really interesting options out there. But this is something that's so tied to us personally, and you know, we believe if we get this right, we're going to have an impact on mountain communities all over the world and be able to save lives. And there's really, you know, thinking of other things to do out there, I can't imagine anything I'd rather be doing. So just feel very fortunate.
Well, Tumas, this is the perfect combination of building a business out of something you love and doing good at the same time, saving lives. I mean, it's got to be a fun thing to see develop.
Yeah, I it's not hard to get out of bed in the morning. We're having a great impact on society that we really are really love. I spent the last 20 years in different outdoor companies and aerospace before that, and making something, you know, 5% lighter or 10% faster has, there's some personal motivation there, but being able to have a little bit bigger picture impact on real important life-saving kind of function, that's important.
And now one of the big milestones in front of you is raising capital to, now you got to go to market. Now it starts getting expensive, right? You could keep your expenses down. How's that gone? What is that process like, and where are you at in that piece of the puzzle?
Sure. So we were part of an accelerator program out of MIT that supported us very early on. We raised a seed round of funding, and that was from a group of angels across the country, technology experts, experts in data. Also, our investors love the outdoors and love the backcountry and what we're doing. And we're also just wrapping up a Series A as well right now, so it'll be closed in about 2 weeks or so.
You know, you just mentioned the accelerator out of MIT. Larry, you and I have been there. The show's been doing a series on, there's an accelerator here in Park City. Mm-hmm. How helpful was that? How important was the accelerator in helping you take this from something that, hey, this is neat, it's an idea, to now you got a business?
I mean, that accelerator, so the Global Founder Skills Accelerator at MIT is one of the best things we ever did.
I hear it ranks right up there with the Park City Accelerator, too. I'm not sure about it.
You know, I don't know if it's quite that good, but it was an incredible experience for us. We were working with, it's a global program, so we had teams from all over the world, from Russia, from China, six teams from MIT. And so you're not only learning from the mentors and advisors, but you're learning from your cohort of companies. And they're all doing different things, but you're all facing very similar challenges. So one of the things that we're so excited about in moving to Park City is helping to foster that community of entrepreneurs here and doing everything we can to work with fellow entrepreneurs. Pando Labs, we've been working there quite a bit.
Which is the accelerator here.
It's where the accelerator is located.
Exactly.
I'm curious, you know, we had Clint Betts on a couple weeks ago, the big entrepreneurial event this weekend, which was a huge success. We'll talk about it for a couple minutes later. Start SLC, did you get down there? Did you do any of the events? What did you think?
Oh, it was terrific. And you know, moving out here, didn't realize that there was just such a robust startup community. Was able to see the CEO of Cotopaxi speak at Start SLC.
Davis.
Exactly,
yeah, he's
Davis.
Incredible.
It was terrific this week, and it's a great community. It's a terrific community to be a part of.
Well, that's a good way to end the conversation. If backcountry folks are interested in learning more, what's the website they can go to see what Avanet is all about?
Go to avatech.com, AVATECH. We have a great kind of introductory video that on the landing page, it kind of explains how we're helping the mountain community and some of our vision going forward.
Okay, and Avanet is for professionals.
It's a subscription service for professionals right now. We will be working on a consumer launch in the future.
Okay, very fine. Thanks for joining us, Tumas Lakso and Brent Markle of Avatech, a new startup in Salt Lake, in Park City, rather, going to market right about now. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, guys. We're going to be rooting for you. You've got a great start and a bit of a journey still in front of you, but it's going to be fun. Stay with us on Mountain Money. Our next guest is going to be Bill Brunson. He's with the IRS. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
This is Ryan Hoffman, branch manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Boy, that was fun, Larry. I love talking to entrepreneurs in this town. We've got so many fun things going on. On the phone with us now, we're going to switch gears. We're going to go from fun, exciting startups to, sorry, Bill, a little bit scary and sometimes bureaucratic IRS. Our guest is Bill Brunson. Bill, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, guys. It's always a pleasure to be on KPCW.
Boy, I think that might have been one of my worst intros in 3 years, Larry.
You had a couple of loaded words in there.
Yeah, I sure did. Sorry about that, Bill.
And this is really someone, Bill is, who you can...
He's a good guy.
Who he can say, I'm from the IRS and I'm here to help you.
Yes. Well
Bill, and say it with a straight face.
Yes, Bill, you're one of the good guys. You're a regular guest on Mound Money. And tell us what you'd like to talk about today. I know that there's some scams out there, and then there's also some advice that you have for folks that are in the process of filing their taxes.
Well, you brought up a very good item, and that's that tax scam or tax scams. Currently, the IRS is letting folks know about 12 of the most egregious. They refer to them as the Dirty Dozen. But the number one scam that I've seen this year, last year, and even the year before, because we've been tracking this thing since October of 2013, is a pervasive phone scam where you're going to get a call out of the blue. It's going to be unsolicited. And the person's going to say, hey, I work for the IRS, and you owe taxes, and you need to pay those taxes today. And if you don't pay those taxes, I'm going to send the police over to arrest you. And then they're going to tell you how you need to pay the taxes with a wire transfer or direct debit card. And it's very aggressive. These folks are not nice the way they do this. And unfortunately, people have been falling for this and been victimized.
And not just this year. Larry, we talked about this exact same scam a year ago. So they're still doing this.
It's going on.
And it must be working, which is why it's important, Bill, guys like you come on air and get the word out.
The Internal Revenue Service is going to send you a bill first. And then if you want to, you can contest the amount assessed because you as a taxpayer have rights. So there's a lot of different things that when you first get a call like this indicate that it is a tax scam. And we recommend, the Internal Revenue Service recommends that you just hang up on these folks. Just hang up. Don't listen to them. And they've been enhancing it slightly with robocalls where you go to the store, you come back, and there's a message on your machine, and it's from, one of these tax scammers that's saying they're from the IRS. Just delete it. Don't pay attention to it. Don't fall victim to this sort of thing.
Well, should it be reported to police, or you've got enough reports on it, you're chasing it?
Well, we are chasing it. Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration is handling this particular crime because the individuals are claiming to be IRS employees. But please, report it to the police. Check your credit scores every now and then. Make sure that you don't leave out important documents for other folks to see. Don't carry your Social Security card number around in your wallet or your purse or any sort of documentation like that. You want to be as aggressive with your information so that these crooks can't get a hold of you no matter how. But, yes, you can report it. You can report it to Treasury Inspector General by going to their website, which is www, and the initials for their name, Treasury Inspector General Tax Administration, TIGTA.com. And there's an interactive form, or you've got a phone number that you can use to call in and tell folks about this. Federal Trade Commission would also like to hear about it. But let folks know that you've got one of these calls, and then we'll take it from there.
And Bill, what are some other scams we should watch out for?
Well, the phishing scam is still out there. That's a bad one where the person, once again, calls you unsolicitedly, or you receive an email in your inbox, an unsolicited email, and they're going to try to get you to provide personal and financial information. And the IRS isn't going to work that way. We're not going to ask you for your name and Social Security number. We already have it. And if we need financial information, we'll go to your bank or your credit union, that sort of thing. At this time also, there are individuals who say that they are a tax preparer and that they will get you the biggest refund in town. And you want to be wary of those sort of bad preparers who are offering you nothing but a lot of trouble.
In fact, there's some ads on television. I mean, follow that premise. It's a legitimate firm, but that's the premise, man. We are going to, get you boatloads of cash.
Well, if they're telling you that they're going to take full advantage of the tax code as it pertains to your facts and circumstances to get you all the allowable deductions and credits. That's fine, because that's the way the tax code works. But when they start to pad those expenses, start giving you costs and expenses that you never had. So it's very important when you select a tax preparer that you go to an ethical one, one that will be around after the filing season in case you have a question or you get a letter in the mail from the IRS. And you want to go to one that's going to ask you a lot of questions about your personal and financial information so that they can take advantage of the tax code based on your circumstances so that you pay only the correct amount of tax. So you want to choose wisely in the area of a tax preparer. And keep in mind you need to review that material before you send it in, that return, because you are the ultimate, you are the person that is ultimately responsible for that information.
That's what the fine print says above where you're signing it, that you've reviewed, it's accurate to the best of your estimate. You know, you probably know that.
Yes.
Exactly. And, you know, I want to stick on that point for a second because I want to caution folks. You know, you do want to get every dollar credit that you're allowed. But boy, the penalties are really stiff if you start fibbing on your tax return. What is it? So you're going to owe the back tax, and then there's penalties, but you can go to jail, obviously. But then is it like triple damages or something that the government hits people up with if they fib on their tax returns?
It depends upon the infraction, but you're definitely going to be looking at paying any taxes that you owe based on the correct assessment, and there's going to be interest on that amount, and then there would be a penalty assessment as well. So, in essence, it's a double whammy.
And maybe jail time, depending on how egregious
you are. Well, that does happen to some folks who are very egregious and continue to, say, try to buck the system.
So if you didn't talk about business at lunch, don't write that lunch off.
That's correct. And there's only a certain percentage of the meal that you can take under current code. So if you have a business lunch, talk to your accountant or your preparer afterwards or before, keep a record of it. But if you talk to someone like that preparer or that accountant, they can tell you what percentage of that meal is going to be an allowable expense. Or you can go to irs.gov, and we have a publication on business expenses, and it will give you the percentage of items that you can claim. What is an ordinary necessary expense that is an allowable item?
What is your best advice, best IRS advice on record keeping? Just keep everything that you're going to, everything that's going to wind up being a line item on your taxes, you need to have paper to back up or an electronic record?
There you go, or the electronic record. And there's guidance on IRS.gov as to the format for your electronic records. But the better records a person keeps or a business keeps, the correct amount of tax that they're going to pay, no more, no less. And you want to keep records for a minimum of 3 years as an individual and a minimum of 4 years for a business. And then you want to keep some records until you actually dispose of an asset so that you can keep track of it for the general acceptable accounting methods that are out there in place. So it just kind of depends. But we do have a publication online that explains for individuals and businesses what they need to do in each area. But you're absolutely right. You want to keep all of your records so that you don't pay any more than the law than you need to.
Well, go over that again, because I think there are a lot of people, including me, who have boxes and boxes of old records, not really knowing at what point it's safe to throw them away. So IRS will not, and maybe it's a statutory thing. Is there a point at which IRS clears the books on old returns, and at which point you don't need to worry about retaining records? 3 years, you say?
Correct. Generally speaking, if you're going to be audited, it's going to happen within the first 18 months, but it could be as long as 3 years out. Then after that three-year period, then there's not going to be an issue.
Now, Bill, I think we want to be cautious there, because if the IRS has the right to come back up to three tax years back. But once you open that audit, you may have a question about a tax return from 5 years ago. Is that right? So before Larry throws away that box, he should know that.
That you can have an audit that causes earlier years to be reviewed as well. That is an item, and it's
so
very true.
My advice, Larry, is you've got three homes, you got plenty of storage. Just put it somewhere safe and leave it there.
Squirrel
so
it Bill, away I, until
Bill,
I die. Huh?
I have to redeem myself for such an awful introduction to you earlier. So talk to us about some more of the good things, and specifically people are filing their taxes. If they have questions, you guys have an 800 number that can help them out. And then secondly, don't you guys have a program, I think it's called the Omnibudsman program, where if they need an advocate on their side, it's a IRS-paid employee, but the person has a fiduciary obligation to the taxpayer, not to the IRS. Tell us about those programs.
Well, you're talking about the taxpayer advocate. And Utah does have a taxpayer advocate in Salt Lake, and their particular group is an ombudsman for the taxpayer, so that if you're having an issue and you've done everything that is required of you and it's still not resolved, you're not getting an explanation, you can go to the taxpayer advocate, and then they will open up the case again if it is a case, and start working with you toward a resolution. Those are the folks that basically cut through the red tape. Now, it's not all instances that someone needs to go to the taxpayer advocate, but if you do, they're going to be there to provide assistance to you at no charge. And they've been around, I don't know the duration of that particular program. I know there was an earlier program that morphed into the taxpayer advocate. But they are a quality part of the Internal Revenue Service, and if you do need their assistance, they're there to provide help.
And what about the 800 number to get help as you're filing your taxes?
1-800-829-1040, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. is the time frame that you can call that number. But folks will find pretty much everything that they need on irs.gov. So I would go to our website first, where you can find forms and publications. There are items that are kind of automatic, so that if you want to check on a refund, you can do that. If you need a business number, you can get one over through irs.gov. You can order transcripts. There's a whole lot of different things that you can access and do 24/7 by going to irs.gov first.
Well, Bill, it's always good having you on the show. Our guest this morning has been Bill Brunson, our friendly IRS media relations man. Bill, thanks for joining us this morning.
Guys, thanks for having the IRS on.
Thanks, Bill.
Okay, and stay tuned. Up next is going to be Anne-Marie Portnoy. She's the owner of My Liquid Garden over by Kimball Junction.
Hi, this is Greg Cropper of Jones Waldo Park City, a Park City law office. I've been a big fan of KPCW since its first broadcast back in 1980. Jones Waldo has been representing clients from Summit and Wasatch counties since 1875. You can find us at joneswaldo.com.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts with Park City Medical Center, a nonprofit community hospital. Did you know Summit County has the highest rate of breast cancer in Utah? It's an alarming statistic, but one that can be changed with early detection. Mammograms save lives, and at Park City Medical Center, our team of skilled experts use the latest technology for the most accurate reading. We also offer soft robes, a private women's only center, and a special cushion called a mammopad to help make mammograms more comfortable. Call 658-7051 to schedule your mammogram today. It's a call that could save your life.
Juice. Welcome back to Mountain Money. Larry, we've been having fun in the studio so far. We've talked avalanches, we've talked IRS, and now
what do you think of IRS is a fun conversation?
You know, Bill makes it fun, and that's why I felt bad kind of after doing that intro.
Well, you said he was the tax man and from the bureaucracy.
I ended with our friendly IRS.
Well, that's because you were trying to avoid getting on the audit list.
That's right. But in studio with us now, we're going to switch gears. We've got Anne-Marie Portnoy. She is the proprietor of My Liquid Garden. Anne, welcome to the station. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So, Larry, I don't know, how many bars do we have here in town?
100 plus? Yeah, probably.
Probably. Yeah. And how many juice bars do we have, Anne-Marie?
Just one, kind of the one like ours, I guess.
Right.
There's the Booster Juice, and Fairweather also makes juices,
but that's a very different program. Tell us what you do.
So my Liquid Garden, we just opened up a storefront at New Park, and we freshly extract juice using raw organic fruits and vegetables. Yeah, so that's we juice it, we bottle it, and you come in and it's a grab and go.
So there's a place for everything, right? Booster Juice is kind of a different drink, and in my mind it's kind of a treat. I enjoy going there.
Yeah.
And when I go to a place that juices primarily fresh vegetables is the thing I'm looking for. That I go there for a different experience. Who is your typical customer base at My Liquid Garden?
It's usually, here in Park City, we have a lot of active athletes, busy moms. So I'd say active, busy, athletic moms. And I guess you.
and they say you should understand your customer. And you're here in the studio. People can't see you, but you look like you're the customer base, right?
Right. Yeah,
physically fit, active. I know your husband. I believe you guys have kids. So you are your customer, and that's got to help quite a bit.
Yes, it does. And that's kind of why I started, just to add more fruits and veggies into my own diet and for my family. And it just kind of grew in that sense.
So is this a meal or a supplement between meals? When would you come in and consume your juice?
Yeah, I think that's a personal preference. Like, we do offer a couple of different cleanses. And so when people are wanting to kind of reboot their system and be more mindful of what they're eating, they'll do like a one or multiple day cleanse. But for like my husband, Jason, he drinks two juices a day just to get more fruits, veggies, live enzymes, nutrients into his system.
It's hard to get all that good stuff.
It is,
I mean, yeah. I came in and you guys have some posters that are descriptive of what's in there. They're pretty small bottles. What are they, 10 ounces?
They're 16.9 ounces.
Okay, so they're 17 ounces. Yeah. And I think the one I had a lot of carrot juice in it. I think they said it was 10 pounds of carrots went into...
Probably six or seven pounds.
Think about that,
yes,
Larry.
That's a lot.
6 or 7 pounds of carrots.
Well, it's more than you'd want to eat in one sitting.
It's more than you could eat, right, I think.
When you come into the store, do you have do you have blenders there, and can you customize a juice, or is it a line of specific drinks?
So we offer about 16 to 20 different combinations, recipes of juices that you can choose from, but you can also go to our website and you can customize any juice. So we have a bunch of different ingredients, and you can pick whatever you want and make your own.
And are you making them on the spot, or are you selling ones you've made?
We start, like this morning, we started at 4:30, and that's kind of why I am based on
that. When you say we, is it, yes, how big's your team, or is it you in there?
No, it's me, and I could definitely not do it without my amazing team. I have 5 people who help me.
Not only amazing, but early rising team, because you're there at 4 a.m. And Larry, what's interesting is, and I wanted to go there, this is a perfect segue. Anne-Marie, your business is not just a storefront. In fact, that's a small piece of your business. You do home delivery. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's how I started. I started in my kitchen, and then the health department said they didn't really like that so much, so I had to rent a commercial kitchen at Temple Har Shalom. They were kind enough to give me a good deal when I was first starting out. That's how people would go on the website, pre-order, and then I would deliver. And then a lot of my customers were saying they don't really want to think 24 hours in advance. They kind of want to just come in and grab a juice. And so that's kind of what, that's why I opened up
the
storefront.
It's kind of winter dairy for fresh veggies, right?
Yeah, yep.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so am I right? I'm guessing that's the bigger piece of your business. The folks that do the home delivery, it's like every Wednesday morning, I want to have 2 or 3 of these juices. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. It's kind of fluctuated on delivery versus people coming in, because we have a new storefront, so we're having a lot of people come in. And then we also cater to companies. And so it was mainly our delivery, but now it's a lot of people just coming in wanting to grab juice and go. It really is a lot of that.
Now, I presume it's a totally natural product, so no preservatives. So you have to get up at in the wee hours to make it fresh that day. I mean, what kind of shelf life do the items in your cooler have?
Right. It's an unpasteurized product. So, like I said, we just juice it, bottle it. You come and grab it. It lasts up to 3 days. It's still good after 3 days, but we find the taste slightly changes. So we just kind of say 3 days. And
taste is another point. I would think my reaction would be if you put a bunch of cauliflower and broccoli and carrots in a blender, it's not really going to taste all that good. It's going to be something that's good for you, but you kind of suffer through it.
Sure, right. When I first started, I probably had like 40 different recipes and then had to narrow it down. But it is about trial and error and figuring out what we don't want to make it too sweet, because the focus on the veggies, getting the veggies, is really important to us. But it is, you know, it's about the different ingredients, the concoction, like kind of what
And that's part of it, right? You go to a restaurant because you like, you know, they make this great dish. And when you try to make it at home, it doesn't turn out quite the same. It's the same thing with juicing. And
yeah.
In fact, I juiced when I was in college and I was all excited about doing this. And hey, this is going to, you know, improve the quality of my life. And boy, what a hassle it is to juice at home, because it's such a mess. And you literally have to buy like a case of carrots. You can't just go buy a bag of carrots, because that makes like 2 ounces of juice. Mm-hmm. It's really impractical. In fact, I had this juicer for years, and it wasn't cheap. It was like $300. It was one of the better brands, Champion. I kid you not, Larry. We had a garage sale, unbeknownst to me, and my wife didn't know what this juicer was worth, and so she put a price tag of $10 on this $300 juicer. Mm-hmm. And of course, it went right away, and I came home and I said, "How much did you get for my juicer?" And she said $10. So somebody got a bargain.
Well, most of our customers own juicers because of that. It is a hassle, and to house all of the produce in your refrigerator and juice it and clean it.
Well, if anybody has a Champion juicer that they want to sell for $10, I might go up to $20. Give me a call.
So is it vegetables only, or do you mix fruit in for flavoring?
Yeah, fruit. The greens sometimes are a little bit bitter and earthy, and so to cut that, we use ginger, lemon, a little bit of fruit. Yeah, to make it palatable.
They're like chefs.
I brought some for you. You can try after.
Okay. Yeah. Very fine.
So you're a startup. Mm-hmm. We talked with our previous guest, Avitech, about the big event, Start SLC, where we had Clinton a couple weeks ago. First off, your husband was one of the sponsors of that program, your husband, Jason Portnoy. Mm-hmm. His firm, he's a venture capitalist, Subtraction Capital. So thank you to both of you for sponsoring that. That was a huge event, a lot of fun, a lot of good for the state of Utah. Did you go, and what
did
you think?
I did. It was awesome, and it was fun to see other venture capitalists with Jason talking about how excited they are to see this kind of growth in Salt Lake.
Utah's happening.
Utah,
there's the East Coast, there's the West Coast, and you know what? Right in between is Utah, and we are leading the entrepreneurial ecosystem, so it's fun to see. I'm getting on my soapbox. I should probably wrap up. Anne-Marie Portnoy, thank you for joining us. If people want to find out more about My Liquid Garden or visit your retail location, tell them how they can do that.
Okay, so we're located at Redstone at Kimball Junction, and our address is 1241 Center Drive.
You're right by the Best Buy.
We're right by the Best Buy, yep, and Maxwell's Pizza. Our phone number, if you have questions, is 435-633-1066, and our website is www.myliquidgarden.com, and you can pre-order, or we have a bunch of information on our website.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us, and we will be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Thanks, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Hideout Canyon, Master Plan Community on the Lake, info at hideoutcanyon.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Three interesting topics, if you want to know more on any, it's avatech.net for the avalanche probe combined with software website information, avatech.net, irs.gov, of course, and myliquidgarden.com.
Yeah, and, you know, all three fun guests. You know, I really like this whole entrepreneurial ecosystem and blending in some of the big authors that we've had on board, as well as guys like Bill from the IRS. Also want to, Larry, just, you heard me mention a couple times, this big event that was in Salt Lake City over the weekend. Boy, that was a huge success. I bet they had over 1,000 people Saturday night. Just lots of energy.
Start SLC.
Start SLC, BeehiveStartups.com. You know, that was, in many ways, Clint is an entrepreneur himself, right? That was a big dream that many people didn't think he'd be able to do. We all wished him well, and it took a lot of work, but by goodness, he did it. It was wonderful.
So, that is interesting that Utah has become this center, along with East Coast and West Coast.
Well, as you create 10 companies that are worth $1 billion each.
As hotbeds of startups and entrepreneurship. What's in the water here?
Well, that's where I was going. I mean, we've had these companies that have taken 10 years to get there, but they've built in really great companies. Qualtrics, Pluralsight, Domo with Josh James. I'm spacing on one of the other. Inside David Elkington, InsideSales.com. It's taken a long time. And, you know, it's this entrepreneurial spirit. And you know, we have it here at this radio station as well. You know, you look at all the coverage that this station did at Sundance. It's a lot of work for the town. It's also a lot of work for the station. And this station's 365 days a year. Larry, you and
Indeed.
I did this show once on Christmas Eve. You're like, I thought we were off, and you called up and said, "Hey, we're doing Christmas Eve," and you know the town has a lot to be thankful for the work that the station does, kind of providing some of those interweaving fibers that help make us a community. And we've got a pledge drive coming up next week. It's been a great year, and I'd love to see everybody in Park City really get behind and continue to support KPCW the way that you always have.
Indeed. You know, our economic model, our business model, we ask our guests what their business model is. Our business model is that we are listener-supported, and that's not our sole source of revenue, but one quarter of the pie. The revenue pie for KPCW is from our listeners.
So we've got the pledge drive coming up with everybody's familiar. You guys this year launched something new, the Broadcasters Club. Let's take 20 seconds and tell our listeners what the Broadcasters Club is.
Broadcasters Club is another effort to go beyond the level we're at now, which is we spend everything we bring in, and we do it with a very small staff. But if we are to grow and continue to cover better the ever more complex events of town, we need to grow in terms of the resources we have available to cover this complicated village we live in.
You know,
so
it takes a village, and we're a player in the village, and there's lots of players that support us, right? There's the people that support the Pledge Drive, there's the Broadcasters Club, and there's also the supporters that support this station, and I want to thank those folks now. We've got Mountain West Bank, we've got the Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Designs, and Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough. Thank you all. As Larry said, it takes a village, and you're part of our village, and we're glad you are.
And that is the underwriting component is a very strong piece of the pie. About half of our revenue comes from our great underwriters, like you just mentioned, a quarter from grants that we go out and get. Some are government grants, others are private foundations.
Let's take 10 seconds and talk about that. The government component of it is a tiny piece of supporting a public radio station. What part of the revenue budget is it?
It's about 12%.
12%. I think most people would think a lot higher.
And we are trying to reduce that percentage because government funding is fickle. It goes with the whims of Congress, and right now the winds are against us in that area. So we are consciously trying to reduce
that piece of the pie,
and the only way we can do that is by growing local revenue, and we do that through our pledge drive. And that's why it's vital that if you enjoy this program or any of the other programming on KPCW, that you be on the phone to us next week. We invite you to be part of the Valentine pledge drive. And with that, Doug, thank you for being with us, as you always are on Mondays. And this is KPCW Park City.